You know, in classical philosophy, the Greeks and Romans had lots of sayings expressing a similar idea. Meander used to say, "Time is the healer of all evils." But one of the most advanced spiritual thinkers of the modern age had her own insight on this, inspired by the Bible, and it has so upended old ways of thinking that countless people have been healed as a result, tens of thousands of those healings published, without waiting around for time to do its bidding. Hey there, and welcome to Sentinel Watch, where we look at life through a spiritual lens. I'm David Brown. In her seminal work, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, Mary Baker Eddy writes, "Now is the time for so-called material pains and pleasures to pass away, for both are unreal." Now, if that's true, why should we expect the healing of any condition to be anything less than immediate? Mrs. Eddy expected it, demonstrated the immediacy of spiritual healing, and you know, you can expect it too. John Biggs is a Christian Science practitioner from Maryland Heights, Missouri, who's been working with this powerful truth to help himself and others see immediate healings. And today, we're going to talk about it with no further delay. John, welcome back to Sentinel Watch.
Thank you, David. It's great to be here with you. And I just want to say, too, how glad I am to be with all of y'all. I woke up this morning and just immediately was filled with gratitude to get to be with you and the whole production team behind the scenes there. I'm so happy to be here with you right now.
And the listeners, they're just part of this big conversation,
that's
too.
That's right.
Hey, why has this issue of the immediacy of healing become so important to you? What got you thinking about this?
Well, you know, I was reading another one of Mary Baker Eddy's writings, this one in her collected work, Prose Works, from her book, Christian Healing. Mm-hmm. And she was talking about the sort of mazes maybe we sometimes put ourselves through, how we pray to infinite God and then talk all about all the places that he's not there, like in this part of me that hurts or in this situation that's bad. And we try and get an infinite God to come over to this finite place. And I won't read the whole book, but a paragraph here really stands out to me that talks about this. Mrs. Eddy writes, "The infinite can neither go forth from, return to, nor remain for a moment within limits. Clothing deity with personality, we limit the action of God to the finite senses. We pray for God to remember us. Friends, can we ever arrive at a proper conception of the divine character and gain a right idea of the principle of all that is right with such self-evident contradictions?" And that challenge really spoke to me and woke me up and turned a light on my own prayers and my own sense of expectation.
What do you think Mrs. Eddy was saying there? How did you read that?
Sure. What really sticks out to me there is a need for consistency. If we are trying to rely on God, right? If we're committing to relying on God, then the connotation of that must be that God is reliable. But if God is infinite and yet I need to somehow pray about a space where he wasn't and therefore something ungodlike was allowed to happen, I am not praying to a reliable God. I'm praying to my high school gym teacher who needs to come fix a spat between the other kids. I'm not admitting the infinitude of God. In fact, I may be sort of kneecapping my prayer by starting with the sense of God as not infinite. And I've just been really appreciating, to put it really bluntly, therefore, the opposite of that, which must be the presence of God, the immediacy of God. You know, there's a Sentinel radio from years ago. I don't remember quite when, but it was called Freedom from Worry. And the last account is an interview with a Christian Science practitioner, Richard Hogarty, and he says this beautiful thing. I'm not going to quote it exactly, but he says that when we put ourselves in God's hands, we're admitting that he's taking care of us, and we need to leave ourselves in God's hands and not sort of take ourselves back out again. You know, I mean, and we never could take ourselves out of God's hands, or it's just our sense of things that we are correcting and being consistent about. We need to be consistent with looking to God and staying with God. And so I tell you, I've been loving what this discipline and this diligence has really given my practice of Christian Science. It's given me a standard to hold to, so I don't feel like I'm sort of flopping around wondering how I ought to pray today. I'm looking to God here, the seamlessness of God here, instead of trying to bring him somewhere where he somehow wasn't.
Do you have an experience that you could share that might give an example of how this way of this approach that you're describing brings about immediate healing?
I sure do. And I actually had described this in a written article several years ago, but it's a perfect fit for here too. I was on the beach, the Oregon beach, where we love to spend some summer times, and just playing in the dunes with my family, and we heard a muffled cry coming from somewhere, and we all looked up, and it turned out there was someone caught out in the ocean.
Wow.
That part of the coast has these riptides where people can just get sort of swept out almost like a conveyor belt, and a lot of people don't know what to do about it.
Yeah.
A companion on the beach went to get their cell phone to call the police, the Coast Guard. Another family member ran to go get a life preserver, and of course we're praying. And I tell you, I just prayed. I said, God, what do I do? And I just got this immediate sense that I was going to see God today and that I should go out in the ocean. And this is, seeing God today makes sense. Going out in the ocean doesn't make sense for me. I'm not what anyone would call a strong swimmer, but I just felt moved. If I'm going to see God today, all I can tell you is that the only thing that made sense in that moment was to go out to this boy. And so I felt myself almost carried across the beach and started walking into the water. And it turned out it was a kid, sort of maybe a young teen, and he was flailing and crying. No one else seemed to notice. Most people looking at him somewhere else on the beach. And I kept walking out there. And, you know, I was trying to pray. I was trying to come up with, okay, you know, I know that God is going to protect him. I know that God's love must be here. And I was, my attempts at talking were practically being smothered by what I would refer to as an angel message that came to me, an inspiration from God, an idea directly from divine love that just kept telling me, you are going to see God today. You are going to see God now. And so I just was moved out. And I was maybe just above knee deep in the ocean. And all of a sudden, this kid flailing around, and I can see him getting dragged out, suddenly is lifted up to about waist high in the water. He'd been flailing around. There's no log right there. And he's suddenly brought in waist high up, as literally as if he was on a conveyor belt, just brought right back and deposited very gently right back on the beach.
Wow.
It wasn't like a cartoon roadrunner zippy fast slam thing, but he just was lifted up. He was deposited on the land and was tearful. I went over to him, and, you know, the sheriff had come down to the beach, so I connected them, and suddenly his mom had realized what was going on, so we got them all connected, and he was safe, and that was it, and I went back. And as I was walking back to where I was suddenly so overcome with how, I mean, obviously life-saving and wonderful that was, but I was overcome with how God had showed me what to do, and I didn't need to do something so that God would come soon to help, that God was there, and that we would see God today. And, I mean, obviously the practical benefits of that for that young man were, of course, marvelous, but it's been a real rock for me to hold to since, to remember this importance of not sort of insisting that there's something going on where God isn't present and he's better get over here pretty quick. You know, I mean, I don't know how much time that kid would have had. Like, there wasn't time for God to stop having breakfast and finally come over. You know, like, but God is here. God is here. And the funny thing is, you know, I don't know about you, but like, so I had this wonderful experience, and you'd think, boy, wow, that must be the way I always pray from then on. Well,
yeah.
As I, you know, caveats seem to come in. Just, well, this has been going on for a long time, or that situation's been going on for a while, you know. And so we sort of think that maybe there's places where God hasn't been immediate, and so now we have to pray for him to come back. And much more recently, since really diving into that paragraph that I quoted from Christian Healing earlier, I've been realizing, no, there is no circumstance where it allows for God's absence, because God's presence is the fundamental fact of reality.
Wow. What a story. There's so much that I want to ask you, John, that I'm having difficulty sorting through. But but when you felt that impulse to go out, and you knew, it sounds like, from your description, that it was divinely directed, it sounds like you didn't hesitate. And you just kept praying through that process, kept right there with it. I don't know. Sometimes I think that I can get caught up in my own thoughts. How did you remain open to what you needed to do? You know, it's sometimes I find myself when I'm in the middle of something, I'm trying to process what's happening, and I'm thinking about what humanly needs to be done. And does that conflict with, like, say, what is this impulse that I may have? Am I doing the right thing? And I'm questioning.
Yeah.
And yet you leaned into that so hard with such trust that I would like to know how to do that better.
Yeah, yeah, bless you. I mean, and it's something we keep practicing. You know, I think that's such a great question. I think what really moved that fullness and immediacy is that it was completely clear to me there was no room for equivocation. Like, if I'm going to see God today, then I just need to see God today. And like I mentioned, I was trying to pray, meaning I was trying to say things. But, you know, actually prayer, we do have a role in prayer, but our role in prayer is really to admit that God is here and to listen. And sometimes we do feel that we need to say something which helps, like, remind us that God is here, mm-hmm. right? But the point is what God says. And so I think that something that really helped me stay there was just that it was so clear that there was no time, there was no opportunity for equivocating or dilly-dallying or, like, trying to insert myself into it. Like, it was mm-hmm, so clear, mm-hmm. You are going to see God today. All I'm going to be is a witness. I want to be crystal clear. I'm sure this came across, but I still want to say, I absolutely know that I didn't extend some super cool divine arm and personally pick that boy up myself. I saw the power of God. My role is to be a witness to what God is doing. And that's an arena of thought that we can practice. We can practice being a witness. The thing is, so much of our daily lives are caught up in what we need to do, right? What do I need to do to feed my family, to stay healthy, to serve my church properly, to pray properly, to have fun? What do I need to do? What do I mm-hmm, need to do? Mm-hmm. Well, Mary Baker Eddy has a very nice, sharp statement somewhere in miscellaneous writing. She says, the warfare with oneself is grand and provides one with plenty of employment. I love her statement that it's really, we are tackling a sense that there is some separate you, some ego, some id that has to make its own way.
Uh-huh.
And hey, I'm trying to do my best so I can get up to God. But what if you're already with God? Right? We're putting ourselves in God's hands. Then don't take yourself back out of God's hands. Leave yourself in God's hands, where we always truly are.
You are touching on something that really struck me in your recounting of this experience. You said that you saw, you heard this idea that you will see God today. You'll see God's power today. And there's no reason why we have to wait for the emergency to know that that is the truth. And this is maybe part of the practice that we can get into every day. I know I will see the presence, feel the presence, see the power of God today. We don't have to wait for the emergency.
Yes, that's so crucial, because obviously we don't want a life filled with emergencies, you know.
No,
and if we needed an emergency to pray, I think that would be a rough situation. You know, I think our daily prayer that Mrs. Eddy gives us in the manual of the Mother Church, starting off with "Thy kingdom come," you know, and then the rest of the prayer sort of elaborates on what that presence means, but she's echoing Jesus's primary statement. Look, the kingdom of heaven is here. And of course, that's a direct quote from the Lord's Prayer that Jesus gave us. Thy kingdom come. And you know, that kingdom isn't a term that maybe tons of our listeners think about in a practical level all that much. We've got democracies of various forms of government.
Sure.
But in a kingdom, it means that there's one ruler and that ruler's word goes, that's what the law is. It's a statement of dominion, and it's not haphazardly practiced. In the kingdom, you are under the king's law, and thank goodness, you know, God is the king, God is good. And so when we talk about the kingdom of heaven, we're not talking about a place you go after you die, and we're not talking about a merely blissful state of mind that you sort of drift off into sometimes. We're talking about immediate practicality, that God's law is present here. We're talking about, well, the locational practice of God's power, you know, a location in our hearts. Jesus said elsewhere, the kingdom of heaven is within you. You know, the power of God, the law of God is in your heart. Heaven is here, and this is a practice that we can commit to no matter what. This is not a pleading prayer. Oh, God, please, please, won't you dole out a little bit more?
Right.
This is an admission. This is a yielding. I think that's a very important verb, yielding. This is a yielding to the fact that God's kingdom is come and that it is established in me. That the kingdom of heaven, harmony, awareness of the presence of God, the reliability of God, the applicability of God's laws, that this is established in every single one of God's creations, that this is a rock-solid foundation and standard that I can always look to, and I never have to wonder and flop around trying to figure out what to do. So this is like a diligent thing, and it's a commitment I make. And right along in the themes of this whole conversation we're having, I'm going to look to God to see that government. You know, like with that boy in the ocean, the ocean's power is symbolically probably one of the greatest powers on earth, right? Like it
comes up in the Bible a lot, for sure. Yeah, right.
Yes, exactly. I mean, symbolically and physically. And yet, the power of God is greater. It's truly actually the only power. God wasn't in a contest. This boy was so gently, so smoothly, so quickly just brought right in, right along that same line he'd been drawn out at. And that's because God is here. We're not trying to make his kingdom be here. Mm-hmm. It's that thy kingdom is come. And so therefore, this is how I'm going to act. This is the way that I can show that I know that God is here.
Which brings us to another point in that story that you told us about the boy getting pulled in by that undertow. When you were telling the story, I thought that it was going to wind up as you went out there into the water and suddenly the two of you were brought together and you picked him up and you saved his life. You know,
I know, right?
Isn't it funny? Because in a way, don't we do this often in... when we are looking for a healing, we think we know how this is going to turn out, or we think we know what we're being led to do, when we're actually being led to do something that is entirely spiritual, to completely put our trust in God and to see our existence as more than just a manifestation of what the eyes and ears and senses tell us. And what happens? The boy is lifted up and deposited on the beach safe.
Yeah.
To me, that is so symbolic of the way many times we try to figure out how the healing is supposed to work out. And sometimes perhaps maybe inadvertently work that into our prayer, when really what it means to be humble, to be completely yielding to God, is to have that confidence. We're not writing the script for God. We're completely letting go and leaning into that trust.
I'm so glad you brought that out. Yeah, the imagining how the healing is going to happen, how the resolution will happen. That's really an outlining. And sometimes people say, I just don't have any clue how this could happen. And they say that sort of hopelessly, as if their failure to be able to imagine what could happen means that it can't happen, you know?
But
if someone says that to me, I say, you know, that's the safest place to be, because then you're not trying to imagine what it could be. You're just looking.
Mm.
You're just looking. And you know, if this is someone who's reached out for help, you've admitted you're looking to God. You've placed yourself in God's hands.
You're a witness to God's power. That's your part.
Right. Yes. And that's an important discipline for all of us who are practicing this science of Christianity, you know, with healing. And this is, I'm very specifically not saying only journalists and Christian Science practitioners. I'm saying everyone who's practicing the science of Christian healing. Mm-hmm. How important of a discipline that is for us to keep admitting that we too are witnesses. We are not makers. We are not making the healing happen. We don't have to imagine how the healing will happen either. Oh, they're going to grow this much. They're going to learn this lesson, and they're going to grow this much, and they're going to recover this, and then it'll be great. Well, I mean, it's an interesting narrative, right? I mean, what you thought my story was going to end up on, like, that's a comic book, right? That's a really cool narrative, right? But it's also all about me, right? It's all about, what are we imagining? What do I think? But like, what God knows is what we're actually interested in. What God knows is himself. He knows infinite good. And the very thought that we could figure something else out, or something that we have to add to it,
right?
Well,
right.
I say this gently, but that's some pride that we can love to have healed ourselves.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And this really goes to that immediacy factor. You know, John, I could ask you questions all day, but do you have another experience or healing that you could share with us?
Oh, totally. And this story, the reason I want to share it is because I want to share how it doesn't have to only be an emergency. This is just, recently I got to take some surfing lessons and I finally stood up, good for me. But in the course of one of my times of not standing up, I fell off and banged my foot and my ankle.
Boy.
And it didn't feel good, but I mean, you know, oh well, you just, well, I don't like to say this, but you just live with it, you move on and carry on. Well, you know, the next day it still didn't feel good. And I'd been thinking about this statement, again, this call to action from Christian Healing, from that book, and I was thinking, gosh, I didn't do it. I didn't be immediate with looking to God, and now it might be too late, you know? Now, stepping out of myself for a minute there, I recognize how actually nonsensical that is, because every moment is an opportunity to look to God, but I was stuck in the timeline view. Right? The calendar view. This happened yesterday and I didn't look immediately to God. And now I can't look immediately to God because I'm stuck in the effects of it. Right? Mm-hmm. And I know I've done that before. I think maybe a lot of us do that. Well, you know, what I've been learning to do is, when I feel stuck, I don't try and madly tread water, just trying to stay afloat right where I am feeling stuck. I've been really grateful to more and more humbly just look to my books that I've been given, to my Bible, to my Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, and to Mrs. Eddy's other writings. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. And I'll tell you, I just opened right up to this wonderful passage in Miscellaneous Writings where Mrs. Eddy writes, "When a false sense suffers, the true sense comes out and the bridegroom appears. We're then wedded to a purer, higher affection and ideal." And all of a sudden, what that said to me right there was, my foot hurts. That is a suffering sense, so it can't be what's true. Oh! And I suddenly lost all fascination with the concept that that suffering sense could be my real sense.
Wow.
And once I lost my, I guess you could say my Velcro to that, my holding on to that false sense, well, the true sense came out. And I felt that, I mean, I know that sense of being wedded to that higher ideal might sound strange in this specific case, but I did. I felt one, and I felt unified with the sense that the true sense, God's sense, is here. And I was so happy because I realized this is the immediacy of God. You know, I mean, and I was healed. I mean, my foot didn't hurt anymore, which was great. But the lasting lesson was the the sort of, I guess, obvious lesson that it's never too late because the time for immediacy never passes.
It's now. Right.
We can always look to God here. It's just that, again, with the imagining thing, sometimes we say, no, I have waited too long, and now I obviously have to struggle through.
Isn't it crazy? We just get hung up on that stuff often.
Yeah. And bless our hearts. And that's, again, back to that, to the daily prayer. Enrich the affections of all mankind, our affections, our love, our sense of hope, our growing sense of humble certainty that God is here. These things are enriched by God. Our sense of admission that love is here can always be enriched, and it's by God's power. That's the thing. If we're witnesses, then it's by God's power. We just sort of need to yield and let ourselves look to Him.
I love what you're saying here, but I want to anchor this in something that I think I've wrestled with, and I would hazard a guess that a lot of listeners have wrestled with, people who have been students of Christian Science for some time. I'm praying for healing of a situation, and that healing doesn't seem to be coming. It's stretching on, or it seems to be resistant to it. And there's a hymn that a lot of us lean on when we're not seeing the immediate results of prayer. It goes something like, God is working His purpose out. And, you know, I think a lot of students of Christian Science, I'll tell you what, I'm just going to speak for myself here. I think I've often seen that as permission to accept that it'll take time for healing to happen.
Oh,
you know, God is working His purpose out, and when I'm ready, when God knows I'm ready, then the healing will happen, you know. How do I square that with this expectation that healing is immediate? How do I square this idea, God is working His purpose out, and my sense that I should expect healing now?
I'm so happy you asked that. You know, God is working His purpose out. I love that hymn. He is working His purpose out. And it's just that sometimes we don't quite see it, or it's hard to feel it sometimes. I think we all know and have experienced that not every healing experience is immediate on a human calendar sense of things. Like, even though it was only a day, right? That story I just told about my foot.
Right.
You know,
right.
That wasn't technically immediate. And one thing that I've appreciated is the idea that, but when the healing happens, well, that's immediate. And I love that. I mean, I do actually appreciate that sense of immediacy. But at the same time, I'm not sure that quite, maybe I could say, compassionately answers the concern about the interim.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Well said, actually, John.
Yeah. You know, the first thing I would say is, in such sweet sincerity, I would say, bless your dear heart and bless everyone's heart. It doesn't mean something about you. I want to extend that assurance to anyone maybe listening who maybe is nodding right along with you there. David, you know, bless your heart. It's not you. It's not something you missed or you didn't do. And the reason I want to start with that is because I think that sense of self-accusation comes in, and then that all like what am I doing wrong? I have to figure out what's happening.
Yeah, right.
You know, and all that actually does is continue to take us away from just witnessing God, right? Because your heart's in the right place. Your heart, you want to correct yourself. You want to know what's going on. You know, of course, if we did something that's, we're praying in a way that's ineffective, of course we want to have that corrected, and it will be corrected. But do you remember that parable that Jesus gave of the tares and the wheat? And there's, it's this story, you know, the landowner has this field and the workers go out and they say, well, there's tares out here. Who did this? And he said, well, an enemy did it. And they said, well, should we go out and dig up all the tares, you know, this invasive plant? Mm-hmm. And he says, no, because if you do that, then you'll rip up the wheat as well. So just let them go till the harvest and then you'll see the difference. And the point is that at the harvest time, those tares, those invasive plants, they look different and they're able to be separated much more efficiently. So the field is our field of consciousness. We don't need to go ripping through on some sort of hunt trying to figure out what you've done wrong. Uh-huh. What we're doing is we're admitting that heaven is here, thy kingdom come. And then what we do is we watch God. And part of that too is we watch our consciousness and we watch what, not digging, but just watching what is coming present to us. And the harvest is sort of a funny metaphor because we often think that's like once a year or twice a year, depending on the crop, right? But in this sense, harvest is simply any time that we recognize what doesn't belong, right? And I'll tell you, something I realized not too long ago was I was just thinking through some personal things and sort of muddling along, da-da-da. And I was sort of thinking about how some things just weren't going as well as they could in my life. And all of a sudden, this really loving but very firm angel message came to me and said, you know, when you engage in self-pity and self-justification, you are insisting that God isn't there caring for you in that time that you're self-pitying yourself about. And I realized, oh my gosh, I'm admitting God isn't caring for me. And once this is like a harvest, right? I suddenly realized I've been hosting this thought in my consciousness. And I realized it wasn't mine, right? But the thing is, it became really clear that it wasn't mine right then. It wasn't something I had to dig for. In fact, when we self-pity, we really justify it. Like, well, I have the right to be pitying, right? Mm-hmm. But when we engage in that, we are admitting that, well, God wasn't caring for me during that time that I'm now pitying myself for. But the thing is, we have to come to that realization naturally and lovingly. You know, I'm not saying this story and then saying to you and to everyone listening, now so you shape up, quit pity. You know, it's not some mean thing.
I get it.
The point is that the realization came so naturally because I keep witnessing and putting myself in God's hands and looking to that kingdom of heaven. And anything that doesn't belong is going to stick out. So my response to that question, you know, what do we do with the long things? My response is to consider your framework. Like, are we insisting every day, I've been in this problem for this many years. I've been here. Because when we're insisting on that, we're sort of accidentally insisting that God hasn't been caring for us. I'm not asking anyone to ignore or just sort of pretend anything. Mm-hmm. But it does matter where our thought rests. You know, like imagine in that first story, if I had gone out, I jokingly talked about how I'm not a good swimmer, right? But imagine if I had felt God's impulse to go out. Imagine if I had stopped and said, no, I can't swim. So may I watch you from over here, please? You know, it turned out that I didn't need to swim. But the point was that watching God meant that I was right here with God and there was nothing else for me to do right then. There was nothing else for me to do. And that included not thinking about all the years that I haven't been able to make it across the swimming pool. You know?
I get that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we allow ourselves sometimes when we don't even realize it, maybe, we allow those sort of thoughts to be part of the framework.
Yeah.
Part of the work of prayer is losing that framework.
It really is. You know, of all things, I'm sorry to say this, but of all things, I was reading a comic book not too long ago, and it was an interesting story. And the hero said something like, if you're doing your best day in and day out and nothing's changing, you might need to change your framework. And I just put down the comic and I thought for a long time, I loved that. you know, this is just a comic, so I'm not going to read more into it than any. But to me, it wasn't saying toss everything out and pretend you don't know anything about God. That's not what that says to me. What that says is, what is the framework that I have built? You know, what is the structure that I feel like I'm living in? Am I admitting every day that I have had a problem for however many years, days, or whatever? You know, we're not trying to pretend. We're not trying to ignore. If, for instance, if someone calls for help, absolutely you can tell the practitioner, the person you called, you can tell them, you know, I've been struggling with this for a while. Like, you're not trying to hide anything.
Sure.
But there's a difference between humbly asking for help and saying the things that come to mind as a part of that request. There's a difference between that and living with it every day. I have been in trouble for this many years. I'm in trouble. I'm in trouble. God, please help. I'm in trouble. I'm in trouble. I'm in trouble. God, please help. Like, the majority of our time is spent with the other. Now, I want to quickly just take a step back and say, I hope that none of this sounds blaming. Like, it is not your fault that these things are happening. But, you know, I like how you asked, David, early on in this conversation, you asked, like, what could I do to practice this more? And all these ideas you and I are talking about, I love them because these are things that everyone can practice in their daily life. And they'll help them adjust their framework, you know, to look more purely to our reliable one God and truly put ourselves in his hands. These are all things that we can use in our warfare with oneself, right? Providing us with plenty of employment. These are standards we can look to that are unchanging. But it's not that you've been doing a bad job. Mortal mind, a sense of limits, shall we say, a sense of limits always wants to turn things back to a limited framework. And the easiest way to do that is to say that you're a dummy and you don't know how to do it. It's your fault, obviously. Well, the point is we're looking to God. The point isn't how well can I swim. The point is, can I look to God? And the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm. And that everything else flows from that perspective, not from the perspective of I've got to work on this. I've got to find the answer. I've got to do I.
Yeah.
It's working from that, from a completely different perspective of,
that's right,
of God at the center of your being.
That's right. That's right. And it's a wonderful thing. We've been given this provision. I've mentioned them a couple times in this conversation. We've been given a wonderful provision in the structure of the Christian Science Church for Christian Science practitioners. And these people are, of course, are available to anyone calling for help. If you ever feel that you need some help, it's not admitting defeat to ask for help. It's actually quite humble to admit that God is here and to admit you'd like some help seeing it. You know, you're never alone. And of course, you always literally have your Christian Science pastor, your Bible and your Science and Health and Mrs. Eddy's other writings. You have these at your bedside table. And you have so many things from the Christian Science periodicals. The amazing team behind this podcast has produced so many things for so many people. We're swimming in resources. And the thing is, it's not that you need to look for, I need to search madly for the one healing thing from this article and that article and then this passage. Like, I got to try and figure out what to do. It's that we've been given so much so we can just calmly turn to what we've been given and see what we see. At any given moment, maybe you don't have access to a book or a magazine or even a phone to call for help. But thankfully, part of the whole point of what we've been considering here is that God is here. And right in that moment, just to ask for help is actually to admit that help is there. And like I've been saying, ask for help and then leave yourself in the presence of that help. You know, don't keep scrambling and think, oh my gosh, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? Well, here you are with God. And all the resources you need must be supplied because God is all. And he is always with you. Not trying to plan out and imagine every single thing we need before we can have healing, but just letting ourselves turn to God and turn to what we've been given. And that's the first step, is to admit that he's here.
John Biggs is a Christian Science practitioner from Maryland Heights, Missouri. John, I've had so much fun talking with you today, and I feel like I've learned so much. I can't wait to practice a lot of what you've been talking about here. Thanks so much for joining us on Sentinel Watch.
Thank you, David. I'm so grateful to get to be with you.
Sentinel Watch is a production of the Christian Science Sentinel. I'm David Brown. Our podcast is produced by Carlos Machado, Sophie Ungerleiter, and our executive producer is Amy Richmond. Our editor is Ethel Baker. Our audio engineers are Tim Malone, Noah Flatt, Alyssa Britton, and Jeff Turton. Our theme music is by Jonah Bobo. We'll talk again soon.
Looking for inspiration on a specific topic? Make the most of the JSH online archive by finding examples of Christian Science healing with the advanced search feature. You can filter for youth content, audio content, or by publication. To use the advanced search, go to the search icon in the top right of the JSH online homepage, and then select Advanced under the search bar.
This podcast is produced and copyrighted by the Christian Science Publishing Society.
Thanks for joining us on Sentinel Watch. If you liked this episode, please consider subscribing to our show and leaving a rating. You can find new episodes weekly on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can also find our entire archive of Sentinel Watch episodes online at sentinel.christianscience.com. If you have comments or questions about this podcast, you can reach us through the Contact Us link, also found on our website.